You know, this intro is starting to sound really familiar. On this week's
Comics of the Atom!
Welcome back to Comics of the Atom, a podcast that examines some of the most influential and important comic series to date and the people behind those creations. I am part of your dynamic duo, Michael Von Green, and the man in the bat suit with me is Carson Wooder. Carson, how's it going?
The man in the bat suit, I could live with that. It's going great. How are you doing today?
Good. Now the question is, what Batman sidekick? Who would I want to be?
Oh God!
Definitely not the old Batman show, Robin with the tight shorts. That's
no
awful.
Burt Ward.
No Burt Ward. Maybe I'd be like Nightwing or Duke. Duke seemed kind of cool. Yeah, the character that was sort of around, I guess. I don't know whatever happened to that Scott Snyder creation, but I think he was Scott Snyder's creation, right?
That's
where he started showing up. Yeah. So anyway, all right. So now we're going to get back into Animal Man, where I think things are... I know we've been saying it continually through this podcast, but things are going to get even weirder in these next couple issues. So let's just get at it. We're going to start with issue 9, which is something we probably should have covered, I think, last time. It would have been a good, I think it would have been fit in more nicely with those like sort of single issue stuff. So here we have like just another single issue. And this is just like a goofy, I guess it's kind of a goofy family dynamic type story. Martian Manhunter is the guest appearance in this issue. So he shows up at Animal Man's house because what's his name? Mirror Master has done some heavy damage from their last encounter. And as a JLA Europe? Is that right? I think that's what they said,
yeah.
Which is kind of, yeah, I don't, do you have any insight into that? I did not know that there was a JLA Europe.
So I actually, not too long ago, discovered Justice League Europe myself. And I knew about it as a kid, but I never really paid any mind to it. Just because, like, as a 10-year-old, like, Justice League Europe, that sounds so lame. So I was trying to take a look at the cover for issue 1, and I actually have a pretty interesting, like, team of C-list heroes. Like, your leader of the team is Captain Atom, like,
okay,
full, like, nuke suit Captain Atom with like the silver lining and that stuff.
Oh yeah.
And also on the team they have recruits such as Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, so they're kind of on, I think they were on both teams at that point if I remember right. And then you also got, of course, Wonder Woman, and then
okay,
there's a couple characters I'm forgetting, but Animal Man, he's also on the team. So when you get Animal Man, Booster Gold, and Blue Beetle on the same team, I definitely want to check out that book. Like, if that was going today, I would probably put it on my pull list.
It's just so weird that they're just like, all right, well, we'll take all these American people.
Think of a single European on that team.
Yeah. Are they, what's...
I don't know where Themyscira is at on a map, but hey, Wonder Woman's close enough, I guess.
I guess, yeah. It's just, I was like, what is happening? What? Maybe that gets mentioned more later on. I don't know, but it's sort of like you're part of this. So as a perk of that, you know, anytime a villain destroys their property, I guess you're insured, and they show up with the crew and they start to repair the damage and install all the fun security stuff that leads to some kind of, you know, gimmicky moments throughout this issue. So that's just... That's what's happening. That's what's driving this like story. But there's also some family dynamics. Cliff is having a hard time with some bullies who call him Animal Boy. And so there's like, I think, you know, you're starting to sort of see the cracks in the relationships that Buddy has with his family. He's so super hyper focused on being a superhero that he may not be being a super dad. So I think like that's some of that stuff is coming out in this issue. You know, there's not really much to say. It's fun. You know, there's a Martian Manhunter. you know, is able to help out with the bully situation. And then sort of the issue ends with a tease for what's coming next. But Carson, you said that this is drawn by one of your favorite artists, Tom Grummett, correct?
Oh, yeah, Tom Grummett. I was so happy to see his artwork in this whole thing. I know that, you know, Chaz Turog's been doing most of the art, which, you know, no offense to Chaz Turog, but I love Tom Grummett's art so much more just because when I was growing up, I was collecting the Superboy stuff, Adventures of Superman 501 and up, where, you know, he basically took over that book for a while, post-death and reign of Superman. He did like that whole run with Connor Kent's Superboy, and that's the art I grew up with, like Tom Grummett, Dan Jurgens, that type of stuff. So when I look at a 90s book, that's like my most favorite art I can see. So when I saw he was doing this issue of Animal Man, which I think he does a couple more later of down the line. I hope this isn't the last we see of Dan Jurgens. Come on, me. Tom Grummett. They have such a similar art style. But yeah, I definitely enjoy each time I get a chance to read one of his comics. But yeah, this issue in general, it was almost like a comedic pause in between like your two dramatic acts, even though there are a couple, you know, spots where they do drop plot points, like where Jay Highwater, who I haven't even really talked about yet.
Right.
He goes to like his apartment, which she doesn't know anything of what's going on. He's kind of like a mystery to figure out who he is. And he discovers a book for Alice in Wonderland on the ground in his apartment. And there's a piece of paper in it that says, "Ask the Psycho Pirate." The Psycho Pirate. We get a chance to talk about Psycho Pirate today. I can't wait.
Yeah, we'll get back into that here, I think, in an issue or two. But yeah, that's there's sprinkles of the bigger story that's coming. And so we'll move on to issue 10. Oh, no, we're not doing that. Instead, we're going to get a bonus issue, quote unquote bonus, I guess, with Secret Origins number 39, which was Animal Man and Man-Bat. Which in the omnibus that we have, the Man-Bat story or Secret Origin story is removed, which is kind of disappointing. It's like you see this cool cover with Man-Bat and Animal Man fighting. That, I mean, I doubt that that's part of Man-Bat's origin story, but I have no idea. I guess I have to go track down that issue. I'm sure it's just, you know, a flashy cover for the sake of selling the book. But anyway, this is really interesting because even though this is not a numeric issue, this is sort of setting up what's going to happen in the next like three or four issues. And so right off the bat, we're kind of introduced to these two aliens who are essentially, you know, spying on Buddy and are concerned because his powers still haven't returned to full form. He's still having issues. He doesn't understand why. And, you know, they're kind of concerned about that as well. So mixed in between these aliens giving you this, you know, narrative over what's happening on the pages, you're also getting this mixed of the sort of the quote unquote Animal Man origin, which feels like a very old fashioned story. It's supposedly or allegedly supposed to take 10 years. It was supposed to be 10 years ago that Animal Man got his powers. But you know, it does feel like something out of the 50s, right? And so, Carson, how does Animal Man get his quote-unquote powers?
Yeah, so in this one, the aliens are observing what's going on with Buddy, so we kind of get that early part of him not being able to control his powers by, like, jumping like a flea when he tries to control a dog. He can't hold his breath underwater. So that kind of raises the red flag for these aliens, who I think we figure out later had a little bit to do with the creation of Animal Man. So they're kind of like viewing his origin to see like what's going on. Why are things messed up? There was this thing called a crisis that, you know, it seems like things have been off since that crisis. So they're kind of looking into his origin, and yeah, it almost feels like a different character, doesn't it, from the Buddy Baker we've been reading so far that we see in this origin. So I thought that was, you know, a little bit of an interesting choice, which I think they will definitely pay off much later in the book. So, yeah, he gets his powers. Basically, he's out hunting a Wascally Wabbit, and he encounters a spaceship and it kind of just blows up in his face. And then you kind of get to see, what is it, a tiger and a gorilla corner him at the same time. Like, they're also drawn to the explosion, I guess, when they're all out in the wild. And he is able to kind of manipulate their powers and throw the tiger at the gorilla and then get them roped up for the other hunters, the capture and that stuff. And meanwhile, you know, it shows him getting a chance to propose to his wife, which, once again, he like has that flat top haircut, so he looks like a different character. His wife even looks a lot different in the flashbacks, yeah, in my opinion, yep, too. Like you said, 50s,
oh, yeah,
is pretty accurate in that early 60s look. So,
yeah, it's very purposeful, like the way that it's drawn. Mm-hmm. It is supposed to, I would assume it's supposed to be evocative of that era. Like, everything is, you know, all the dialogue, right, is on the page. You're hearing their thoughts. Like, everything is over explained. The art doesn't drive or tell the story that it does down sort of this new modern era. So it's very complimentary of how, which wasn't even that long ago, right? Like, you know, just superheroes and characters on the comic book page just continually spouting out what they're feeling, describing everything,
right,
and not letting art or not letting the juxtaposition of the panels on the page drive the actual narrative. So it goes back and forth on that. And it's like, it's really fascinating because I think, like, you kind of pick up on it pretty quickly, I think, but then by the end, you're definitely like, man, this is weird. What is happening? And, so, you know, it kind of ends with the, you know, I think it ends with the aliens, you know, I'm not sure, which, by the way, how do you feel about how these aliens are drawn?
I mean, it is kind of an old school look once again. I don't mind them too much because that's just kind of what I expect. Every character, like in the 60s and 70s, for a while, wore like underwear style costumes.
Yeah,
they got like this like referee underwear look going on, with the stripes going vertical for some reason. So, yeah, I feel like they were probably referenced from something previous. I'm unsure of, but yeah, they were definitely weird looking when it came to the clothing choices. They didn't have the right stylist, I guess.
Yeah, this makes me want to go back and reread the first issue that Animal Man was introduced in. Yep. So that,
Strange,
you know,
Adventures,
I can
180.
Yeah, there you go. So I can see what these parallels are, because that's where we're going to keep on. I think that's what this book is going to continually reference, is the past and how it needs to change for the future, and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, they're definitely quote unquote gray heads, I guess. It's it's really, they're really goofy looking, especially, like you said, their wardrobe. So anyway, we have that issue. We're half an issue. Boom, that's done. And now we're back to issue 10. So issue 10 now is going to open up with this one pager, which is a recap of the Animal Man origin story. So it's sort of what we just saw in the last issue, that Secret Origins issue, only very much more condensed and, slightly told, I think, in a different way. So that is actually going to keep popping up. And it, like, man, it's such a brilliant narrative device that Grant Morrison is going to, man, I wonder how many times people have done that. Yeah. And both those creators are like, oh, you son of a bitch. Hopefully they're brothers. but anyway, yeah, like that origin story is going to kind of keep popping back up. But after you read that, man, there's just this beautiful, we had just got done talking too about, you know, sort of that old school comic book storytelling where everything is written, you know, 1,000 times over inside the panels. Everything's over explained. The art doesn't tell the story. It's the words that tell the story. But here we get a couple pages of interchanging environments. One is a DC character called Vixen, who we'll go over here in a second. And she is running away from this invisible enemy. And it is spliced between this fox hunt that we're, you know, if you're familiar with, you know, sort of a European tradition of a fox hunt, it's a bunch of dudes on horses and dogs that chase down foxes. That sounds like a horrible afternoon to me. I would never want to do something like that, but you know, whatever, hundreds and hundreds of years of tradition. So as that's, you know, those two things are happening once again, right? It's the hunt, the hunter, you know, hunting his prey in both situations. You know, Vixen escapes. The fox actually escapes too, because Buddy swoops in and is able to, you know, rescue the fox. You know, Vixen, I'm only familiar with Vixen from, I think, like the JLA cartoons and maybe some other stuff. I'm not that familiar with her as a character. I do know, I think it's like she was introduced in like 1981, I think. Yeah, Action Comics 521, 1981. So, Carson, any insight into Vixen? Are there any stories that you really like? Because I only ask you, right? Because I know that you love DC quite a bit, and you've read a ton of it. So I just know she's sort of like a B, C-list type of character that doesn't really appear too often.
Well, the funny thing about Vixen is, I was just thinking about this while you're talking, she has been cast more times like already than Animal Man's even ever been thought about on like TV and stuff. She's obviously Justice League Unlimited. She was in that.
Yep.
And then she was also basically cast twice in Legends of Tomorrow. And then Arrowverse and stuff. Yeah, they used her character once. And then, like, the Legends went back in time and had her grandmother, which, you know, was, like, in her 20s, of course, too, because, hey, the CW network. So, yeah, there were two different versions of Vixen on that. Storyline-wise in the comics, the one that I can think of off the top of my head was the Brad Meltzer Justice League of America run. She was in a little bit of that, and she kind of had a fling with Red Arrow, who was Arsenal, and with Red Hood and the Outlaws. So she had a little bit of a stint in that Justice League run. But other than that, she's had a few one-shots and miniseries there and there, but I would say B and C list is where she usually sticks around at.
And she is a character that has animal powers too.
Yes.
As probably didn't make that clear, forgot to mention that at the beginning, like, who's this character, why is she showing up? And she gets her powers through the Tantu totem.
Yep.
So it's just this artifact, kind of like in a very similar way with a Bwana Beast, and that will be brought up here, I think, in the last issue. So, you know, some of the stuff that Morrison has planted early on, right, is coming back, you know, in spades here. So, yeah, and then after, so eventually she's going to get to Buddy's house, but before that happens, we do get a little bit more of the Highwater story. So he has because he found the Alice in Wonderland book, I guess he just assumes, like, hey, Mad Hatter, that's where Psycho Pirate is too. I'm going to go to Arkham Asylum. And so Carson, Psycho Pirate, who is this character? Why do you think he's in this run? Like, what do you think is important about introducing probably one of the worst dressed supervillains in comic history?
Oh, good old Psycho Pirate. So he has the power to manipulate emotions, basically, so he can make people feel really sad or really angry, and he kind of uses that power to bend people to his will at times, more or less. So his biggest appearances were in both Crises, basically. So obviously Crisis on Infinite Earths, and then you see him because of that appearance, and probably in this appearance too, probably is because of it. He appears later in the 2000s Infinite Crisis as well. So when he was put in Crisis on Infinite Earths, he was put on the Monitor's teams to, you know, help fight the Shadow Demons. For what reason, I'm not really 100% sure. I guess to manipulate some of the villains to help them fight the Anti-Monitor. But the Anti-Monitor actually kidnaps and takes advantage of Psycho Pirate himself to help not only control three planets to bend at his will so they can't fight back, but also control Barry Allen the Flash. And he kind of almost leads to the death of Barry Allen for 25 years. So he has an interesting arc between the two crises. So when you see him again, he's the only person who remembers Crisis for whatever reason. So basically, by the time issue 12 of the original Crisis is rolling around, he's in Arkham Asylum. He's crazy. He's the only one who knows what's going on. So I think Morrison kind of picked him out and plucked him out of, you know, kind of obscurity. Like, hey, if this guy knows everything, maybe he does know everything. So this is where you start to break that fourth wall. And Psychopirate, I'm trying to look up the line in the book here. He goes, "What do you want? Did the Wolfman give you my name?" Of course, referencing Marv Wolfman, who wrote Crisis on Infinite Earths. So we're smashing the fourth wall big time once we get, even Mad Hatter here. Mad Hatter, he's talking trash to Highwater. I don't even want to repeat what he says because it's not PC in today's culture. But he's talking about, we're all in a script, rushed out to meet a deadline. We can never aspire to be more than a penny dreadful melodrama. And he talks about, you know, just cheap words on a page, some cheap hack writing our lives. So he's calling Morrison, a.k.a. Morrison, calling himself a cheap hack. So definitely one of the most interesting scenes thus far.
Yeah, I mean, that's wild. Like, the Wolfman reference is really clever and really... Yeah, it's fun. You're starting, like you just said, with the fourth wall, that is starting to appear more and more in this series. I think, like, this is the more interesting part of this story arc right here, is like that, just that mystery, the reference to like our reality. I think it's super clever and super smart and really fun. And I, you know, it's challenging, you know, the stereotypes and I think the normalcy of what comics are and, you know, the challenging material that they could be. So it's really cool. It's really fascinating just to read that, like, you know, something that was coming up in probably in 1989 by now. Right. I think this started in 1988. Yeah. So, it's pretty cool. But back to the action, Vixen shows up. She's not sure why she even was driven to Buddy's house, but these invisible enemies eventually catch up to them. So they start wreaking havoc. And as they're fighting them, Vixen blows some dust to sort of reveal their form. You know, Ellen's in the house with one of her friends. So they get kind of thrown into the mix. But as they're fighting, there's this really cool page, and it's, I believe it's all the same. I think like Morrison likes to use these like very, you know, like Watchmen-esque panels where, right, they're all the same size and they're very, it's a quick succession of that story. But Buddy unravels his own existence. Like, what I mean by that, right, is like his costume starts to unravel, like almost like a string of yarn, his costume, his flesh, his skeleton, until eventually poof, he's gone. And then what happens is, in this weird sort of like, I almost feel like these aliens should be like in Men in Black. They're kind of goofy. But they show up and I guess, quote unquote, eliminate these invisible enemies. And they have their, it's like the last page, they have their arms crisscrossed. And, you know, I can't remember what they say.
Charge now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's like a very action, like 80s movie or something like that. That I thought was pretty goofy and weird. For us, how the balance of seriousness and the maturity of the material, and then all of a sudden you get these goofy aliens showing up. Alien culture, right, taking off, I guess, in all forms of media probably during that time. We're still probably a few years out from X-Files, but yep. You know, early 90s, man, remember all those like alien heads? Like, I had an alien head necklace. I don't know why, man. aliens were cool.
There's that like alien abduction movie too that was in theaters around the time, if I remember right, or maybe a little bit later. Yeah. In the early 90s.
It's so bizarre. And what's bizarre too, I tried to think too, I was like, I wonder if, you know, did Morrison like do this Martian Manhunter? Did he just introduce that, like, hey, I'm going to have aliens in my comic book here in like an issue. I need to like sort of tee it up a bit. I don't know. I think it's interesting that that he chose that character, and now we have these other aliens. I don't know. It's weird. Anyway, moving on to issue 11. Now we have another origin story. Remember that single page? Now it's being told in a different way, and they just changed some of the language. Instead of, you know, like monster space, baby space, you'll keep seeing this page pop up time and time again. And you know why that is because the aliens have, Carson, you were talking about it earlier, the aliens are trying to kind of figure out what has happened with Animal Man, and like something's not right, correct?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Something is completely off. Not only is time kind of messed up because of Crisis, we just had that other crossover event with the Hawkman people. He's still sore from figuring that out, too. So, yeah, we're kind of digging into what the underlying effects of the 80s crisis were. And there's a lot of more fourth breaking wall stuff coming up.
Yeah, they're almost trying to fix, like, try to fix him. And the way that they're doing that is they're, like, trying to fix his origin story. So you're going to get this interspliced with the sort of the main plot, and we'll get to that in a second. But I kind of just want to talk about this real quick because it's kind of hard to go back and forth between these two things, these two different story beats. But as they're, you know, they're trying to fix his origin story, and that's why this single page keeps popping up. And every time they do that, the very first thing is like 10 years ago. So if you're thinking like 1989, okay, well, that's 1979. And we, you know, you go back to what we were just talking about with like the quote unquote origin story, right? It looks like it was something out of the 1950s. So they're almost, I feel like, because like we'll learn that they're, you know, they kind of keep coming back to Earth and reintroducing these elements that keep on giving these other characters animal powers, but they have their sense of time is a lot different than a human's sense of time here on Earth. And so I'm wondering too if it's like they don't quite realize like the problem is that they don't understand that they need to update quote unquote Buddy's origin story in order for it to be more appropriate for the time that currently exists in 1989.
Yeah.
That's sort of how I sort of interpret it. I think that's what Morrison is trying to get at.
Well, I'm just kind of like doing some comparison now. You keep bringing this page up, and I always noticed it popped up, but I was kind of comparing it between the issues, and there are subtle changes to the dialogue, actually. Like you were talking about earlier how in older books, like they're always narrating everything they do, like their,
yes,
you know, memories and that stuff. So like on the second panel, on their previous issue, he's like, tossing me around like a baby, and I've got animal powers. And then that same panel in the latest issue we're talking about here, he doesn't say a thing.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? It's like, it's not only, yeah, is like the aliens have to figure out how to quote unquote update Buddy, but like Morrison is also trying to figure out, like they're also trying to update how you tell that story in 1989. It's really clever. It's really cool. And another crazy thing that Morrison is going to introduce here too is that Vixen and Animal Man, for whatever reason, have rematerialized in Africa, and they are quickly captured by a character called Hamid Ali, who will continually say, "He who never dies. Oh, I've been around forever. I'm Hamid Ali. I am he who never dies." This character, kind of a rotten like stereotype for like a Muslim villain, I think you'd be easily recognizable as that, is like, I guess, you know, I had to go look this character up because I've never seen him. And it's, he was in the Bwana Beast original issue. So sort of another problematic character, right? The white savior of Africa. Well, they call him the white god, but like, let's be real. That's what, you know, the problematic part of that character is. So yeah, like Morrison introduces this character, brings him back, but also he's just colored white. So he's inked black, right? And he has red eyes. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's, I don't know. I have to go back and find that issue, you know, now I got to go find that issue. I really wish I would have went back and read some of the stuff. It's just hard to find. I don't know if I can find that issue anywhere easily. But that's just like a, that's just, it's wild. And he also, like, as part of his villainy, he has like these mechanical animal machines that are tearing up the countryside, and he has found something down inside this crater, so he's trying to dig that up. So that's what's happening with those characters. So they're battling Ahmad Ali. They actually get captured. But Buddy points out, as he's reformalized here in Africa, is that he notices a change in his costume. Do you know what that change is, Carson? Were you able to pick that up?
Let's see. Now I gotta flip to the page. I'm noticing more changes. He's missing the jacket is all I know.
Well, he's missing the jacket, but his A is different. It's more curvy. It's more thin. And if you go back, you could just easily look at that, like that issue 11, those first opening pages, get a picture of your mind what that A looks like. And then what I did as a good comparison is I went back to the Coyote Gospel issue, just because I love that cover when he's on the ground, but I knew that would be a nice flat. And then if you go look in that A, it's like chunky and flat as it bends around his waist, as it wraps around his costume. So slight changes, right? But like it's like, man, another interesting thing. The aliens are just in desperation trying to fix Buddy, because if they don't fix Buddy, I guess reality ceases to exist, right? Yep. Is that correct? Yeah. So one of them loses control and disappears. So as that's happening too, we get a quick flashback to Buddy's family. Ellen's friend's like, hey, you should go, it's time for you to go pick up your kids. And then Ellen realizes like, well, wait a minute, I don't have any kids. And then she starts to disappear. So we're getting that sense that the aliens are not able to do what they were hoping to do, was to quote unquote fix Buddy. Another character is introduced here with Ahmad Ali, and that's Taboo. And she is another character that gets her powers from animals by wearing different masks. And, it's, allegedly they have like the spirits of the animal with inside that mask, and gives her some type of power. But they're going to be dead at dawn. So Ali is like, hey, you know what? She's going to come back and kill you. So crazy issue, right, Carson? Like, this is where you're starting to see more and more of this fourth wall breaking narrative that is becoming probably a mainstay of the rest of this run.
Yeah, there was so many random plot lines, not random, but so many crazy plot lines going through this issue. Like, they tease bringing back Bwana Beast again. They show his mask. There's a dude using a tank that has like a reptile head on it. You get Vixen and Buddy having a campfire where Buddy
calls
the Vixen because he's like inherited the powers of the ape. And he is just watching her just eat this big piece of meat, and he can barely contain himself. So that was like the most random part of this book, in my opinion, but I still got a laugh or two out of it. And then, yeah, the whole thing with the two baddies in here and the alien disappearing. So it's a pretty crazy issue.
And then, so they're gonna, they don't know what to do, right? Cause Buddy can't communicate with any animals. They're in this bunker somewhere. But then as issue 12 starts out, what animal, quote unquote animal, does Buddy use to get them out of the situation?
So, Ali here, he forgot to use the Clorox wipes on his head. So now it's just riddled with bacteria. And so Buddy is able to use bacteria as one of his updated powers. He can actually steal the powers of bacteria and more or less keep cloning himself, basically. So he creates a Buddy Baker army to fight the bad guys while him and Vixen actually break out. And you kind of see in this whole process that Animal Man pretty much can use his powers better than he's ever used before. He's talking about how he's really more comfortable, absorbing other animals after he's had this, like, well, basically a reboot. Like you said, he's got a different costume. He looks a little bit thinner. I don't know if that's just me or not. He just looks a little bit more lean. I don't know if that was intentional by the artist or not, but yeah, he is almost like a full-blown superhero at this point.
That is an interesting observation. I sort of noticed that too. And I wonder if it's because he doesn't have the jacket, like maybe jacket creates some bulkiness to it, but I think you are right. I think he is like a little, he feels like a little, yeah, like more like taller and thinner.
Yeah, he kind of looks more like a Spider-Man would be drawn than like your average DC, like Superman, Batman type character. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Good observation nonetheless. So they're out of the bunker. So they've escaped and now they're heading towards this light that they see on the horizon. That was, part of what Ali was trying to, uncover. As they're doing that, Buddy, jumps down and the alien ship's there. That's where the alien ship is. And where these aliens are that have been trying to fix, his quote unquote origin story. They get into that. And what they realize is like, Buddy can be the only person to fix his story. So as that is happening, Tabu and Ali also follow them into the ship. Tabu and Vixen get into a fight. Tabu is vicious and she actually does several death blows to Vixen, but she's able to heal. From my understanding, I think it's just the ship is almost in this like, a moment in time or something like that, I guess. I don't know if they ever really explain it, but because I think the aliens and their equipment, they're sort of, timekeepers, or they're able to manipulate the realities around them, right? Nobody can actually die within the space unless it's by their hands. And so I thought one of the more interesting moments of this book is that, Ali shows up. He once again repeats that line, "He who never dies." And one of the aliens just says, "You know what? Yeah, you're actually gone," and quote unquote erases him, and describes him right as this old fashioned character, right? Because he's just this, rotten stereotype. And so the cool visual part of this is that he actually starts to fade, right, Carson? But he doesn't really necessarily fade in like the traditional sense that, any type of story that you see in a comic book where someone is erased through time. What you actually see the erasing happening literally, correct?
Oh yeah, so you basically see it like Truog was drawing it on the page in reverse, basically. So you see like the little sticks and bubbles, and then like just a generic like word bubble being added, and then you see a little bit more detail, and then you see the final product, and imagine that all in reverse. And that's how I didn't catch this, but one of the aliens actually has like a speech bubble, kind of looks like a clock, and you see him like turning it back with his hand, and that's how they vanquish this guy who cannot be killed. They just erase him off the page, basically.
Yeah, and as a reference point in the Coyote Gospel, I'm not saying that the aliens are responsible for that moment either. I guess they could be. I don't know yet. But remember, right, we also see a paintbrush in those final panels as well. So there's definitely that there's a force at hand that is controlling the reality of this book. That reminds me of something that we missed, I meant to go over. I forgot to bring it up, but as Highwater is visiting Psycho Pirate, he has a book, or he has a couple pages. And what he has is that actual comic origin, that single page story element that we've been talking about, right? So not only is that what we're seeing in the book, but that actually exists within the reality of this Animal Man's world. So that was a cool thing to see. I can't remember if there's any other sort of small details that come out of that meeting, but that's probably really important to note, and forgot to mention that. And then speaking of the origin story, Buddy is finally able to sort of fix that, and that origin story is now much more aligned with something that you would see like in 1979 or 1980. There's a guy with a full-blown mullet, and the spaceship is more organic and creepy looking. You know, the invisible enemies that we sort of got a glimpse at that Vixen showed us when she blew the dust in Buddy's home. That beast is sort of represented in that origin story as well. So, and then, yeah, everything is quote unquote fixed, but the aliens say, "Hey, remember, terrible things are coming." I don't know why they say, "Remember, terrible things are coming."
I think they mentioned it previously.
Yeah. So, and then that's the end of issue 12. We were going to try to get through issue 13 and 14, but kind of ran out of time. But man, holy cow. Like, what a wild, I know I said this last time about those other issues, but this is just, man, there's a lot here. I don't know if we really did it justice, but it's really dense. It's really layered. The way that Morrison is introducing all these fourth wall breaking motifs is really cool to see for the first time. And I'm really excited to keep reading this and see where it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is where it starts to get really good. Like, as soon as you read these, you kind of like, while you were talking, I'm just sitting here flipping through and like looking at the comparison of the origin page, just to see like all of the differences and stuff. Like, this is the type of stuff you'll want to read again and again just to see like if you miss something or just to try to understand something else better. But yeah, this is where, you know, the art, in my opinion, gets a little better. The story gets a lot more compelling. And yeah, it's just like, well, I can't wait to see those aliens again and what's going on there. So in my opinion, this is where the book really gets ramped up and it starts to reward you for reading some of those other issues that were a bit rough around the edges, in my opinion. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to keeping going and trucking on this one.
That's great to hear. Yeah, and I'm so glad all those years ago you said, "Hey, check out this omnibus that's coming out. You should get it." And I'm glad I did. It's kind of amazing to me that this isn't more talked about, or I don't know if it's as well known, maybe just because it's such a, it's a long omnibus, or, you know, it's pretty thick. But I'm happy we're doing it. I hope that if people out there are following along, that you're able to read it and you're able to pick up on all these little small things that are happening within these issues. It's really fascinating to read, and especially, you know, and you know, see, you know, like we were talking before the podcast, I was going back and rereading Crisis on Infinite Earths to kind of get in the headspace of where DC was right before all this stuff happened. And it's even within those years, if you take a, like, you take a look at that story and the way that it was written, the way that it was produced versus what you have here, it's just like a leap in kind of comic book storytelling. And, you know, excited to keep reading it and see where it goes. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Carson, thanks for joining me again, as always. Where can people find you out in the internet?
If you search C Woodard 19 on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, I can be found on all of those avenues. I will be on the Comic Core channel live tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Tonight we're going to be reviewing Old Man Logan. It won our poll last week. And we're going to be talking about some underrated characters. We're each going to pick our top five. And guess who I'm picking? Buddy Baker, Animal Man. So you better believe I'm going to talk more about Animal Man on that show because, hey, he doesn't get talked about enough. I think we just agreed on that. So looking forward to that. And I just usually do a live stream Tuesday nights on my personal channel. But I actually did one this morning if anyone wants to go back and check that out on the Rewind.
That's awesome. Yeah, Old Man Logan is so cool. The Hulks in that are horrifying. That's one of my most remembered aspects of that book. Man, I'm trying to think, like, who would be my, what are some characters that I think are super underrated? That is really tough. I do not know.
And nowadays where like almost every character gets picked for a movie or a show or a game appearance.
Yeah.
Like who's left and who was like been vastly looked over in my opinion.
That is a good question. Yeah, I feel like everything is so hyper-focused.
Mm-hmm.
I would say maybe, yeah, it's like, what would get me really excited more than any, like, I'm trying to think from a comic book standpoint, like the Young Avengers, like we'll read that at some point. But like that, I feel like they have been underserved. If you think about just how many other books are out on the Marvel slate and the fact that they haven't really done too much with them, though I guess their big crossover event is actually centered around Hulkling, I think, or at least he plays a big role. So I don't know, whatever. I'll have to think about that. I'll come up with a list. We can discuss that next time. But yeah, like always, anybody can find me out on, I'm gonna stop saying the internet and start using the old, since we're kind of getting into the late 80s, early 90s, the net.
Sandra Bullock.
Anybody can find me with, what was that?
The Sandra Bullock, eat your heart out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ugh. Don't waste your time on that movie, please. Raptors Revenge, that's where you can find me. So, all right, Carson, thanks again, and I'll catch you later.
All right, later.